and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie, and we are going to talk today about how the green transition and the need to improve Europe's defense can work together. With me today, we have Bruegel's own Simone Italia Pietra, and we have coming to us from Tallinn, although she's in the studio with us in Brussels today, Kadi Ristkok from Cleantech for Baltics, who has been working a lot on how these agendas can work together and dual-use technology that works in the civilian world as well as in the security world. Super happy to have you guys both here today. Simone, talk to us about why we're talking about this now and where the main areas are where we could make a big difference right away.
Thank you, Rebecca. I think that we are in a situation where we all see that Europe is in urgent need to boost its defense capacity. Here at Bruegel, our colleague Guntram Wolf has also made seminal work attaching numbers to this need and showing how Europe basically needs to increase its defense spending from about 2% of GDP to around 3.5% of GDP, which means 250 billion per year in order to be able to defend itself from Russia without the support of the United States, right? And we know that at the institutional level, President von der Leyen has put forward in March the Rearm Europe plan, the Readiness 2030 plan, which seeks to mobilize 800 billion in defense spending over the next years with this purpose. Now, when looking at this upcoming surge in defense spending in Europe, both at the national and at the EU level, I think many people out there, if not most observers, think there is a huge trade-off between defense spending and climate spending. Of course, we all know that public resources are finite. The public resources are scarce in several European countries, for sure, more than others, but also at the EU level. And therefore, looking at the need to substantially increase 250 billion per year more defense spending, while on the other end, the need to increase climate spending by 2% of GDP per year in order to meet our climate objectives by 2030, people say, look, we cannot do the two things at the very same time. So there is a huge trade-off between the defense agenda and the climate agenda. And that's what led many observers think that the defense priority ultimately will be a killer of the European Green Deal. Now, we know that this trade-off is certainly a real issue. We know that, the allocation of the public resources will encounter significant trade-offs in this space. But we also know, and we know that I think very well at Bruegel, that the reality is always a bit more complex. So it's useful to bring some nuance into this debate to show that there is more than this public spending trade-off. There are actually areas where the defense agenda and the climate agenda could actually converge. There are areas where we can advance both agendas at the very same time. And in a recent Bruegel publication, we actually tried to table a sort of common agenda for defense and climate, which is rounded around seven major pillars. The first being clean electricity in itself. We know that the green transition is predominantly about the electrification of the energy system and the switch from fossil fuels to low carbon electricity sources. This is something that is necessary for the green transition, but as we will see, during the debate here, is also very important for the defense sector as such, both on the manufacturing side of defense devices and on their utilization, by the way. A second element of commonality here is the need to develop renewable and low carbon fuels. This is something we need on the green space to abate, for example, the emissions in aviation, but this is also what we need moving forward for the to fuel the military in the future. We have then other items such as greening defense procurement, which could be a common point, the issue of the just transition in the automotive sector, and the possibility of defense companies to take up some plants that will no longer be needed to produce car components, for example. You then have the issue of critical raw materials that you need for both defense and climate technologies. And finally, the issue of innovation in several technologies that have a dual use possibility. And finally, the issue that was very well developed in the NINSTO report of security and preparedness, which is something namely on the energy infrastructure that we need for both the defense and the security angle and the energy transition. So we will dig into the details, but I think this is just a bit of a preview about all the elements we have of commonality, showing already that there is more than the trade-off.
Thank you so much. That was super helpful. Kadi, you have worked with your colleagues on similar topics, looking at the intersection of security and the clean tech agenda. You also come from a part of the European Union that is very close to the European continent's conflict zones. The Baltic countries, of course, are Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. What did you and your colleagues conclude? And tell us about what you've been thinking about.
I really relate to what Simona was saying as well, why this topic is relevant at the moment. You know, talking about my sector in many different contexts is all over Europe. What I see more and more is the confrontation between defense and all the other sectors. And I think we're really approaching it the wrong way, because I see at the same time that what the clean tech companies are doing, that they're finding ways to sell their solutions to the defense sector, to use it for European security, also in the civilian context. So I feel like it's a made-up confrontation between the sectors that we shouldn't go along with, because we really cannot be thinking about this kind of a single challenge or single problem way anymore. We're tackling multiple challenges at the same time. 10 years ago, clean technologies were made only to tackle environmental and climate problems, be it for mitigation or adaptation. But now we're looking at them for food security, we're looking at them for resource security and strategic autonomy, same for energy sector, of course. And yes, the dual use side has been added, at least in the European context. Now we're looking at it way more seriously than we used to. So this is the reason that we're looking at the topic. We feel like there needs to be a more healthy, transparent dialogue on the topic. We need to establish also common vocabulary. We wrote a white paper on the topic, and doing the interviews while preparing this was really eye-opening, because we're not every day talking to the, you know, defense people, and what they think about green topics, so to say, the sustainability, is that governments are forcing them to report on the greenhouse gases of the military buildings, where they are not allowed to actually open up to how much energy they're consuming. So they have inherent problems with this, and they cannot be approached the same way as the civilian sectors. So they feel like the greenifying military is something we shouldn't be doing, because we have been going about it the wrong way, I think. We should be asking ourselves how we can use sustainability and clean technologies for our security and defense causes. And that opens up a completely different dialogue. This is where you can start collaborating. And so what we're doing with CleanTech for Baltics in this white paper is to look at the different uses of clean technologies out of their main use case. And we divided it into three big use cases. So there's the kind of civilian use case for increasing strategic autonomy, and their energy is definitely the central player. And then we have the dual use use case, which definitely is increasing. And I think this is where lies a real opportunity for clean tech, because it's a very good lead market. At the moment, we're putting a lot of money into the sector. So let's use it to also increase the demand for different critical technologies we have. And then we looked also at the kind of post-conflict rebuilding and building back better and depolluting, where clean technologies can be very useful as well. So I think we didn't really map out whether all the clean technologies can be used for security and defense, but I think most of them really we did kind of list them up. And I think what we concluded there is that we need a policies-wide approach to our critical technologies that we need to support, be it from the regulatory context or more on the kind of support measures side, because the support measures are very similar. And we shouldn't be forcing the companies to navigate the multiple support measures that are available in different sectors. So perhaps we can create more of a single kind of a single stop investment approach, and that should really put together all the kind of support measures we have, be it grants, guarantees, equity financing, but also the supportive services that we have. We have developed a lot of competencies on how to support innovation inside of EIC. We need to use it for all the different kinds of technologies we have, no matter the use.
Is this something that, like, the European Investment Bank or one of the other EU infrastructure institutions can put together? You think it should be a private sort of thing? I mean, you mentioned it being a one-stop shop, a place where small companies could go to get funding and expertise. It sounds like a great idea, and it also sounds like we have places we might be able to put that already.
I think the EIB and the Commission are starting to think about it, how to kind of pull together all the kind of the know-how support and the material kind of financial support methods that we have. And I think we shouldn't limit ourselves to the public sector side. We should also bring in the private investors to it and the companies to really see how we can put all the European effort behind those critical technologies that we have. I think it's a complicated topic to undertake, but that's what we need to increase our competitiveness. It cannot be a single policy approach or like a sector by sector approach.
In the next section of the podcast, I'd like to come back to a couple of the things that you guys said, particularly energy. Simone, how big a part of the Green Deal is the energy transition? Are these even two separate things?
Well, I would say that the European Green Deal is predominantly about the energy transition, right? I mean, energy transition is most of the work we need to do to decarbonize our economy, as most of our emissions are coming from the energy sector. Now, I think, as was mentioned, that the energy crisis has illustrated extremely well, unfortunately, in the last few years, how our greatest vulnerability in Europe is our reliance on imported fossil fuels. And that's one of the reasons why the green transition is now being, fostered also on the basis of a strong security angle more than an environmental angle. No, 2025 is not 2019 when the European Green Deal was launched. Clearly, the environmental engine of the agenda is not as strong as before, and policymakers have shifted the narrative towards security and competitiveness, and rightly so, because as outlined in the Draghi report as well, one of the key bottlenecks for European industrial competitiveness, again, is the issue of energy prices, high energy prices, which only by fostering the green transformation we can structurally lower. And again, I would like to pick up what was said before. We have these sort of silos thinking, of course, between the defense community, the climate community. The two are not used to talk to each other. And I very much agree with the fact that while talking to the defense community about climate and, you know, the intersections, often the perception is, you know, you want us to greening tanks or greening our, you know, our structures. And that's, I think, probably something that, namely from the environmental and climate community, came up in the last years as the approach. And I think that's wrong. That's not what we are really talking about here. I think the situation where we are here is really showing how the interlinkages between the two are very strong. And let me maybe focus on two items to make this as an example. If you think about energy-intensive industries like steel and cement. These are industries which, with the Clean Industrial Deal, we want, for example, to try to transform in order to retain them in Europe. Now, this is something we want to do because of competitiveness reasons. We want to keep these jobs in Europe, but also for security, because steel, cement, these are basic materials that you also need in order to be autonomous, in order to be secure, namely in case of, you know, an escalation in the military tensions and so on and so forth. So these are strategic sectors that in order to be strategically autonomous, you need to have at home. Now, we need to transform these sectors. And one way to transform this sector is to foster their decarbonization, their electrification, and to allow this process to happen. The European Commission is doubling down on this lead market dimension. What does it mean? It means that in steel, in cement, in chemicals, the green products still are today and will be in the near future more expensive than the conventional products. So you still have the green premium. So you need to face the cost of this green premium, as we have done in the past for other clean technologies, starting with solar, right, with wind and all the others. And the question here is, how can we secure demand for these products so that they can get to the economies of scale to then slash cost, right? And while not being, let's say, a top buyer for these products, the defense sector could be a place to start. Because if we are going to spend a lot of money into defense equipments and defense manufacturing moving forward, applying certain green conditionality into the steel you use, for example, to produce tanks, it makes a lot of sense, because it allows you to help the industry to transform, to remain here, and therefore to have strategic gains, while at the same time not encountering higher costs for the defense sector in itself. Because if you look at the green premium of having green steel in a tank, that might be around 10,000-15,000 euros, which as a share of the total cost of the tank itself is nothing. So it's a way to start to have a lead market, which could allow you to foster your security need, which really for Europe goes beyond defense as such, energy security being an integral part of the security agenda. And then another element I wanted to come back on is the low carbon fuels, because this is an item that was particularly stressed in the Draghi report, no? The potential for Europe to be a leader globally in the production of sustainable aviation fuels, for example. Again, this is probably the only way we have to decarbonize aviation moving forward. In Europe, we are at the frontier of innovation in this sector. We have most of the global high-value patents in this space. 60% of the global high-value patents in this space are in Europe, but we don't have the production capacity for now. And that's, again, something that is extremely needed in the defense sector, because the defense sector will continue to rely on fuels for decades to come. So we need to find ways to green these fuels in order to make everything sustainable, not just because we want to green these fuels, but for the very simple reason that the defense sector in Europe today is completely reliant on the civilian infrastructure for fuels. And if we accelerate the decarbonization of transport of cars, well, sooner or later, you know, as the demand for these conventional fuels goes down, there is a question, which was also stressed in the NINSTO report on EU preparedness, that you will have a problem with the military infrastructure to supply these fuels. So investing in the low carbon fuels is a way to ensure the security also of the military sector moving forward in the medium longer term.
Steel and green fuel fit into your innovation matrix, or are they more just parts of the infrastructure of a productive economy that we need to have?
No, I think they're key. They're key sectors in the kind of a clean industrial future. They're hard to decarbonize sectors for sure. I agree on the fact that the name of the game is demand. It's not about financing. You can finance anything if the demand is there. I think what we're looking at is a crisis of risk appetite in Europe, and we need to manage that somehow, because European funds do have money, but as has recently been brought out in media as well, is that they're mainly not investing in Europe, and that's a problem. And when we look at why, is that they're looking for measures that help to de-risk their returns on investment. I think that's something that the Clean Industrial Deal is kind of touching upon. They're starting to work more with guarantee mechanisms, with different kind of insurances, and trying to give more stability and transparency on how the different measures will carry on in the future. So it's not an ad hoc approach anymore, and not sector per sector so much. So I think those things, they will help us to finance by coming back to the demand side. We need to work with public procurement, and the defense sector is procuring a lot at the moment. So they're going to be key in making sure that we scale European technologies, and not only purely military technologies, but all our critical technologies, while we're growing the expenditure in this defense sector. I'm very positive about it, because I see that the will is there. But when we look at the reality on the ground today, is that it's still in the piloting phases mostly. This is the easy part, and we're already struggling with this. The hard part is going to be building up a new supply chain system for fuels, for example, for the military use, that is completely or to a larger extent based on green fuels. This needs different approaches completely compared to today. And that needs a first of all, change in the mindset, in a sense that we're not doing it to please the politicians, to greenify a bit the fuel use. The military and the defense sector needs to find their own competitive gains and advantage in those green solutions. And they are there. And I think this is the kind of dialogue part. We need to start talking about it. How does it help? What are the challenges? Because talking to some military sourcing experts, they bring you out very concrete challenges regarding the use of hydrogen in the frontline usage.
It's so interesting you bring up hydrogen, because to me, that's an area that encapsulates the challenge of moving to green energy. You know, you see places trumpeting their clean hydrogen investments, and then they won't even start making any zero emissions hydrogen till 2030. And they point out that most of their infrastructure is going to be importing hydrogen from somewhere else. So you're a little bit exporting the energy cost of making hydrogen in more traditional fossil fuel burning ways. Simone, how to put more certainty on there? Defense is an area where the fuel has to work all the time, and you have to have reliable and continuous energy that makes, you know, solar and wind, at least for the moment, more challenging, since we don't have the battery storage and since hydrogen isn't there. Like, what should we be doing? What should we be thinking?
Well, I think it's important if you look, for example, NATO and others in this space are looking at when it comes to the intersection of these agendas. One element that comes up is the electrification of defense, right? So what you can define as dronification of defense, right? It's actually also an electrification trend. I mean, all these equipments run on electricity. And I think this is the case of drone, but this is also the case of autonomous systems. And by the way, AI-powered surveillance tools that also run on electricity. So the electricity need for the defense sector is going to be higher and higher in the future as a result of this technological evolution in the sector in itself. And I think it's important to stress that renewable energy systems, and namely portable renewable energy systems, might be an important solution for the defense sector also to generate electricity directly on the battlefield. And this is something that in the defense space is looked at with great interest, because that's what you, it would allow you to avoid the reliance on vulnerable fuel deliveries and give you an important strategic advantage directly on the battlefield. So that's just an example to show how important renewable energy, by the way, and electricity, green electricity in general, also is for the defense sector.
Super interesting. And that also seems like something that people would pay for is mobile, reliable electricity generation.
I feel like clean tech solutions in the military or defense usage, they localize things, right? They allow you to produce stuff on the ground. And I recently visited Ukraine and was talking to some energy companies and public sector representatives there, and they have found really creative ways to use all kinds of technology how they can for their defense, right? And I think here, there we see that when there's a need, you find a way. They're using 3D printers to print on the ground drone blades, and they used plastic for that from their different kinds of equipment. Circular economy. More broadly, I think we should really keep close to Ukraine on this and try to learn from them, because they have experience in defending their critical infrastructure in a way that we haven't had to yet. In the Baltics now, it's more and more accurate, more and more important, because we have had attacks on our critical infrastructure under sea cables several times now. And this is also where we can use, be it electric or hydrogen drones, we can use different kinds of AI and data-based solutions to automatically analyze the risks and the threats that are there. I've seen some interesting data analysis tools that allow to predict the risks on power grids, and to also automatically intervene when there is a damage to grid, to switch and to allow for the rest of the grid to function properly while the damage is being repaired. So there are many use cases, very concrete ones. And I think we're only starting to discover how to make use of them. And I think we need to create a better dialogue between the European countries and the private sector. Because those solutions, when we think back to, you know, Cold War times, they used to come from the government, from the military, and then be adopted in the civilian sectors. Now it's the other way around. So the government, in order to make best use of those solutions that are out there, they first need to start talking more to the private sector to figure out what is there and how can it be used. I think on a smaller scale, the companies, they move fast. They find new markets as they appear. And this is where the dialogue can help us move faster also on the state level and European level.
Super fascinating, especially this conversation about taking plastic, making 3D printing a drone in the field, and then recycling the parts from that to make something else. I mean, we hear so much about how difficult plastic recycling is in the broader economy. So the idea of a place where you could really have a circular materials environment, is the implications of that would be huge if they could get it to work. Last section of the podcast, I'd like to come back to investment. Simone, do you think that this is something where private investors can get this going, or does government really have to get started? This is a public good. This is something where government scale money is needed. You know, an extra $10,000-$15,000 per expensive tank isn't so much, but it does add up if you're adding these types of guarantees and greeniums across the sector.
As always, I think it will be a mix of the two, right? So I think that you have certain areas, namely when it comes to innovation, where you need a strong level of public intervention. You have other areas where you need predominantly to the risk private investments, and things will happen. When it comes to investments, when it comes to industrial policy, I think there is one area that is particularly interesting and again illustrative of the synergy between the two agendas, which is the area of automotive. As we know, a sector that is under heavy transformation as a result also of our green policies, our environmental standards, is the sector of automotive and the transition from internal combustion engine to electric vehicles. And this is a sector which is extremely important for the European economy, and namely for countries like Germany, Italy, and many others. And this is a sector where we might actually be losing a lot of jobs moving forward, simply because electric vehicles are much simpler than internal combustion engine cars, way less moving components, and simpler supply chains. So this has the potential to become a very difficult part of the socioeconomic side of the green agenda, because you know, you are not dealing with the closure of coal mines where the number of jobs entailed are really limited. You are dealing with you know, a lot of jobs in the assembly, but also in the components manufacturing level. So as people start to see these factories closing down, the political and social backlash against climate policy might actually increase. And we see populist parties been using this argument already in several countries, including my own Italy. Now, this is a sector where there might be a strong synergy between defense and climate, because defense groups like Rheinmetall in Germany, for example, have said, well, we would take over these factories. For example, no, the Idle factories, soon to be Idle factories of Volkswagen in Germany. Or another example is the Audi plant here in Brussels, which another industrial group showed interest for in the last few months, in order to reconvert it into a production unit for military vehicles. So this part of the industrial policy agenda, to me, is very interesting, because if we manage to reconvert these structures, these factories that are not going to be useful anymore for the car manufacturing, in order to retrain these workers and to utilize these equipments to actually manufacture the military vehicles we need in the context of this defense spending wave, that could be a win-win solution to accelerate, because the assets are there, the defense upscale on the one hand, and to ensure the just transition when it comes to climate and the repercussions of climate policies on the other hand. And I think this is something where, again, you need the policymakers, you know, to understand the synergies and try to really facilitate them. We have funds like the Just Transition Fund, for example, at the European Union level, which can really be used also to facilitate these transformations. And this could be good for the just green transition purpose, but again, also to speed up the rollout of defense spending in Europe.
Thanks for that, and especially for going back to the auto industry, because that is such a European way of looking at this. Many of these challenges are universal. Any country is going to find them. But Europe in particular is proud of its auto industry, has accomplished a lot with that, and now really does have to find a way to take it forward. Kadi, are there some regional concerns that you could offer specifically from the Baltics? We have really looked to your region as a beacon for how to emerge from the Soviet Union and move toward democracy and really achieve a lot in the new economy. And then also because you're so close to the front between Russia and Ukraine, there have been a lot of warnings and considerations that have been really important for the rest of us to hear.
Yeah, I mean, we are the specialists of how to build up a digital economy very quickly, right? So now we're going to have to do the same on defense, I guess. What I see is that we are really quickly building up this defense capacity, and it makes sense in our region. And I think we should be the leaders on a European level in that. I think it's important while doing this that we don't forget the other sectors. Baltic countries are small countries, as are the Nordic countries, quite small on a European scale. We cannot let our economic sectoral balance go out kind of too much towards one sector, especially a defense sector. So we should always build new sectors while creating opportunities for the others as well, I think. And here we can come back to the synergies. In Estonia, we're currently planning a major defense industrial park that's going to be built in the coming years. I think this is the place where we need to make sure that all the kinds of critical technologies developed in Estonia and in the Baltics are going to get used there. We're not a producer of steel, so no green steel there, but I'm sure that we're going to find the different technologies to use there. And this is going to be solving a major problem for clean technologies, which is the demand. I mean, looking at the Estonian or Baltic clean technologies, and I think it's the case in many European countries, in many cases, their first market is a faraway market, and this is not normal. And we need to be buying our own innovation. Otherwise, there's no point in talking about financing it, because it's going to flee Europe anyways. I think that public procurement is going to be a key solution for that. We're not using it strategically enough yet. I know some countries where, you know, the first green procurement categories were toilet paper and office paper. I don't know why. It was probably the easiest to start with, right?
I mean, they do say an army moves on its stomach, and that does have implications.
Yeah. But I think we should use public procurement really as a strategic tool for creating lead markets. European public procurement spending is major. And if we can agree on a common framework on how we're going to be using our critical technologies in the public service, that would be a great move forward. And that would also show the kind of walking the talk from the public sector, because there's been in the past years, a lot of demands made to the corporates and the private sector. I think it's time to really do the same on the public side.
Thank you. Simone, what are the immediate actionables you would like to see from the Commission? Would it be in the multi-annual financial framework design? Would it be in new legislation? Like, what can they do this year to get started on this?
Well, I think, first of all, you need a new policy approach, right? So I think you need to use different instruments at your disposal in a more synergetic, let's say, manner. By the way, let me recall that both the EU and NATO have their own innovation funds. So this is also a kind of cooperation that might go beyond the EU structure in itself. And for example, the EU and NATO have certainly also a common agenda when it comes to all of this, right? So I think talking more between the different DGs and trying to use the instruments we have, such as the EU Innovation Fund, in order to also invest and sustain the scale up of these technologies that have dual use is one way. I think the revision of the Public Procurement Directive is going to be a very important moment when it comes to the creation of the lead markets and therefore also the role of the defense sector in there. I think the EU budget is by definition going to be an important item, in particular the way the European Competitiveness Fund will be structured, right, which will cover all these technologies, by the way. And then I think, this is very important when it comes to the energy agenda and in particular the electricity grid part of the story. We know that doubling down on investing into the electricity grids is going to be fundamental. We cannot roll out the green transition without a very strong expansion and upgrade of the European electricity grid, which also entails investments to make it smarter. And doing that in a way that is also, ensuring its resilience. And let me recall here the issue of cybersecurity, which is fundamental for both defense and the green transition for this purpose, is going to be super important. So I think there are very many items here. But if you look at funding, I think predominantly the item will be the new budget and in particularly, the European Competitiveness Fund structure.
Maybe I would just add to that. I think it's key also to think about the timing. It's not like we have 10 more years to do it. Looking at the clean tech sector, the global competition is harsh. And we have, as a Europe, we've lost the battle on, for example, PV solar. We don't want to lose it in other categories of critical technology for us, be it in clean tech or other categories. There is a need for front-loading the investments. We need to really scale fast. And there's going to be budgetary questions linking to that and how we can leverage more capital faster. There's different ways of doing it. Some of them are already being discussed as new tax measures. But I think we should also think of ways to perhaps use some of the mechanisms that we have in place and they're working very well. I'm talking about the different carbon measures that we have. Why not consider using the ETS and CBAM revenues to leverage more European debt, for example, to have more own resources? That could be one of the solutions. I'm not saying it's the one, but we need a real debate about it, because I see that the 3 to 5 next years are going to be key. And if we can make things move faster, that would help a lot.
Thanks for that. You've been listening to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel. You can find our archives and all of our reports on our website, Bruegel.org, particularly our recent podcast on the energy grid and our forthcoming Blueprint major publication on the EU budget and what goes into that. We've done some work on own resources. You should check it out. We've really been working through these issues and so glad today to talk about how defense and the green transition come together. With us today are Bruegel's Simone Tagliapietra, and coming from Tallinn to Brussels just to speak to us and maybe do a few other things today, Kadi Ristcook from Cleantech for Baltics. You can find her paper on their website. Thank you again. See you next time.